Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's BUNEKE.org.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Mary, your host. I don't know about you, but every time I hear that jivey music, I get kind of bouncy in my seat. But today, I'm a little more bouncy because I'm really excited about who we're going to be talking with. My co-host, Jean Albertson, is here with me, and we have Megan Prowse. She is one of our Be Unique writers. She lives in the UK, and she has managed to jump across the pond, and she's here with us today, and I am so excited. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's exciting because, you know, as a nonprofit, we really rely on people who have a big, generous heart and will give us their talent. And having you writing about well-being and self-care and self-love for the past, I don't know how many months, I don't remember. It seems like you've just been with us from the beginning. It really rounds out the magazine. And even this month, you know, you weren't able to contribute, but you managed my expectations by sending me a lovely little email that said, I'm sorry, I can't do it this time because I'm really busy working on my doctorate. So I look forward to having you back on the show in the future, and I can introduce you as Dr. Megan Prowse.
Yes, that would be great. That would be very exciting.
So you are studying to become a psychologist, I'm guessing?
Yes, that's right.
Or psychiatrist.
It's a psychologist. Okay. You know, lots of people do ask me that, actually. And I think it's really hard to know the difference. But I guess the best way to think about it is a psychiatrist does more medication, and a psychologist, this is in the UK anyway, and a psychologist does the kind of talking therapy side. So
here,
I'm very
here
much,
too, in the United
very
States.
Much think, oh, is it the same? Okay.
And, you know, I always think of you when I look at your website, which I think is such a cool name. It's citypsychchick.com. And I just love that. And if you say it really fast, it's citypsychchick. And so people go, woo.
Yes, although some people think it means that I'm psychic. So I have to explain and manage people's expectations of that a little bit. Say I'm not at all psychic. I wish I was. But no, it's city psych chick, yeah.
Hey, you're not psycho.
Exactly.
Now, I know that you work with the NHS, and we put that in your bio on Be Unique a lot. That is the National Health something.
Service, yeah.
Service, okay. So is that's similar, I think, to the United States CDC, right?
Yeah,
it's CDC. I don't remember.
I think I'd have to put that question back to you, Mary.
I have Google right here.
Well, the CDC is really more of an informational and directive.
It's a Center for Disease Control and Prevention.
Policies for that sort of thing, and implementing strategies for controlling diseases.
Right. So I guess in line with that, then the NHS does do that. So we NHS kind of is an is sort of coming up with policies, but it's kind of on a national level. So we, I guess the best way to think about the NHS is that it is a free service, and it means that everybody has access to healthcare. So it's something that I definitely feel very passionate about, and I really love working for the NHS. So that's a bit of, I'm not sure how it would work in the US, but my understanding is there's, you have more of the kind of private healthcare system where you do have to pay for services.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do we ever?
Well, it's currently a lot of discussion about that now. So, you know, we'll have to see where it goes forward.
Yeah, there have been proponents on both sides of the fence on what is best for individuals.
Yeah.
In fact, I do not personally have health insurance because most of the modalities that I use are holistic in nature, and most holistic health is not covered under typical Western health insurance. So there's a lot of people saying, you don't have insurance? How are you going to do that? Eh. If I fall and break a leg, I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Have to make do. Well, you know, I'll tell you, I absolutely healthy habits, and you know, just basically all around trying to be healthy, eat right, get some exercise, whether I want to or not. Sometimes, you know, that sort of thing, I think makes a big difference.
Yeah, I guess
go ahead.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, yeah, I guess it's that sort of mentality of prevention over cure, isn't it, and kind of looking after ourselves, and I suppose that means many different things to many different people. So.
Well, that's something that you work with too, isn't it, Megan? You make sure that people are healthy mentally as well as physically, and it comes down to having good, healthy habits.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a really tough thing to do, especially if you're busy and you have a family or you have a, you know, lots of commitments. I think I can definitely relate to that, especially recently, as you said, with doing the doctorate and being, you know, obviously having many different commitments, keeping yourself healthy and happy is really, really tricky. And I think, you know, we still have this idea of, you know, often physical health and mental health being separate. And that's something that I feel really passionate about kind of drawing together and integrating, because we are finding out so much more in research about, you know, how mental health affects physical health and vice versa, and how, you know, things like stress can impact how our body actually functions and how our brain functions. So it's really important to be thinking about both sides of that, but understandably also really difficult with everything, you know, kind of going on in our busy lives to cover all those bases. So I guess, yeah, it's something that we need to do, but it's something that I think we need to think about, especially as healthcare professionals, and how can we make that, you know, as simple for people as possible, and how can we, you know, do these small things that make us healthy.
Sure.
Well, you know, Jean, you mentioned something about getting exercise, even if you didn't want to, but because you're a gardener, you get exercise while you're also nourishing your mind and your spirit, I think.
Absolutely.
You're out in the fresh air. And I know that Megan had a post on her her website that talks about that. I think it was a guest post, 3 healthy habits that we forget sometimes. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us a little bit more about that, Megan?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think it comes back to the idea about kind of having those simple things and, you know, those things like keeping yourself hydrated, making sure that you're outside. And I think, you know, given what's happening at the moment, particularly with COVID and everything, I think it's I think we've all been forced to kind of go back to what's really important and think about those small things we can do, because while you're at home, you know, everything feels quite restricted. But actually, I think it's an opportunity to think, okay, what are the small things I could do? I can pop outside for a quick walk, or I can make sure I'm drinking enough water, or I can, you know, put on that little bit of meditation tape or whatever. And Yeah, it's those small things. But also, I think, you know, Jean, if you're a gardener, that's amazing, because that is, Mary's saying, that kind of incorporates everything, isn't it? It's that meditative, I imagine. I'm not a gardener myself. I'm terrible at keeping anything in my house alive for free. It incorporates kind of all of the meditative, that kind of being outside. It's also exercise. And I think, you know, we think about exercise now, you know, as these sort of weightlifting or doing runs or doing these really strenuous things, but actually going back to the simplicity of movement and making sure that you are doing, you know, what you can. And if that's being in your garden or going for a quick walk, that's just as important as getting, you know, 3 times a week exercise in, I would say.
Absolutely. You know, because a lot of people are just able to have the luxury, I guess I would say, to be active all day, and some people just don't. And you know what I really think? I think all of us, myself in the past more so, fall into the habit of never doing anything different no matter what anyway. And so to be able to just, you know, maybe just change it up a little bit and get outside if you don't normally go outside. If you work in a cubicle, I'll tell you what, there's a picnic table out there, and usually it's not full of cigarette smokers nowadays. So, you know, maybe just, it's amazing, just something a little different, and you might enjoy it. Go back.
That's such a good point. Changing up your routine and doing something different. I think, as you say, we kind of underestimate that. And we are, you know, as humans, creatures of habit, and we do get into these routines, and potentially that can turn into ruts, kind of. So, yeah, keeping things fresh and doing something different is always a good idea.
Yeah. Do something fun. If you're not having fun, just do something a little fun, and just, you know, you'll find out.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's why I love – Jennifer created all these commercials, and she used a lot of different other volunteers who did, you know, read them. And then Jennifer combined them with music. And I think that's why I love that little opening music, because it's just kind of light and funny. It's not not a serious, somber tone.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me bounce in my seat. I don't know why that is, but – I mean, I've heard it dozens of times. So you'd think
you
that I'd be used to
it. Mary, do you have springs on your seat?
Yeah, it's a nice top office chair. Yeah, I do.
Well, I was thinking if you get some bigger springs, you could bounce more and have even more fun.
Give me a little trampoline. What I need to do is get one of those big ball chairs. Have you seen those?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Is that like the Pilates ball?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I'm always very envious of people doing their work at something like that. That sounds amazing, kind of being able to sit on one of those.
I used to, when I lived in a different area, I went to an acupuncturist who had the receptionist sat on this gigantic blue ball. And I thought, how much fun is that? It was on wheels and it had a little back, but she said it was very comfortable. I'm like, cool. And it was supposed to help with your balance.
Mm. Very cool. We need these new ways of working, don't we? If we're sitting at our laptops and our screens so much more, particularly at the moment, you can definitely feel that restlessness and that need to, you know, to be moving around and keep things fresh, as Jean was saying, kind of, you know, have something different to your work day rather than sitting at a screen all day.
Yeah.
I feel very fortunate that I am able to work from home because the lockdown didn't adversely affect my mental health. I know it has really played havoc on a lot of people. My husband is working from home and he's doing okay, but he misses his work companions.
He's
a very, very sociable person. And, you know, with this show, I just kind of talk. I mean, if somebody gives me a talking point, I talk about whatever they want us to talk about. But I love being that we were none of us really prepared for today's show because while I was waiting for you guys to log in, I jumped over to Megan's website again and I was just looking through some things. And the fact that my husband is sociable just kind of ties in with one of your other posts about people who have social anxiety. And I wanted to ask you, what is the difference between someone with actual, real, diagnosed social anxiety and somebody who's just very shy?
Oh, such a good question, Mary. I'm really glad you asked me that, actually. It's something that I get asked quite a lot, particularly when I guess it's hard when there are so many labels for things, and I think we can all relate to that with kind of mental health. You know, on the one hand, people say, actually, it's helpful for me to know what's going on with my own mental health and have a label that I can attribute to it. And on the other hand, you know, people have this kind of idea of, are we just labeling very normal, I wouldn't want to say normal, but very natural kind of processes like being shy.
Natural.
Yes, I prefer that too. So I think it's a tough one, but there are really clear markers for somebody that has social anxiety, and I think the best way to think about it is how much it's impacting on your everyday. So, for example, if you're shy and you feel, you know, quite anxious or worried about, you know, meeting up with a big group, you know, we can all relate to that, and we kind of get that at different times in our lives. You know, it could be different age groups, and we know adolescents are particularly worried about social on a kind of social anxiety sort of, if we were to think about it as being a spectrum, they would be higher on that. That's just how we are developmentally. We go through that period of adjustment and then come out the other side. But some people do remain quite shy, and I would say that part of that is to do with our temperament and our personality, and you know, how, you know, we think about this idea of being introverted or extroverted, and I think that does play a big part. But for somebody that has social anxiety, the fear is pretty paralyzing. You know, the idea even stepping out of the house and having to talk to people is a really, really difficult one. And what we find is that people often have quite similar fears if they have social anxiety. So it will be things like people are going to think, you know, awful things about me, or I'm going to come across a certain way. You know, it's this fear of negative evaluation from other people. But to the degree which would prevent them from even entering into that social interaction. And there are lots of other sort of things that come along with that. You know, they get kind of quite physical symptoms, will be very physically anxious, and then particularly worry about the fact that they look anxious. So there are kind of lots of different layers of kind of thoughts and beliefs and feelings that come up for somebody that is socially anxious versus somebody that's shy. So I guess the best, I'm aware that's probably a very long-winded answer to your question there, Mary, but I guess the best
way to think... No, it's very thorough. I like that.
Okay. I guess the best way that I think about it is, you know, is it impacting severely on somebody's life and somebody's well-being? And is it, are there all these different layers to their thoughts while they're in the interaction? Because you'll find that somebody will be very, who's socially anxious, will be very preoccupied in the moment, and will be looking quite distracted because of the amount of worry and thought that's in their mind. So there is definitely a difference, but you know, those that are shy might be thinking, you know, oh, am I socially anxious? But I would say it's thinking about how much you're impacted by that.
So if we were in a group setting and there's someone who appears very distracted and maybe looks concerned or scared, should we approach them or should we let them approach us?
I think it's a hard one. I think because even people that I've worked with who would have that same kind of understanding that they have social anxiety, amongst those people, everybody is still really different. And so I think it is, you know, you might see somebody appear to be quite anxious in the situation, but there might be many reasons for that. So I guess, and I can hear you kind of thinking in a really compassionate way about, you know, maybe supporting that person in the moment, which is really, really lovely. And I would hope that most people would view it that way. But I guess for that individual, it may just be, even if you were to be super supportive and approach them in a lovely way, that might also be very overwhelming. So I would say, you know, let that person approach you, and maybe just, I guess this is true of everything, but maybe just holding a compassionate mindset if somebody is kind of looking particularly anxious. And, you know, if you feel like you know them quite well and want to support them, then that's obviously up to you. But I would say sometimes drawing attention in any way can be really, really worrying for that person.
So maybe just smile and be available.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the best way. But as I said, everybody's different, and that might, people might want you to kind of go up and have a chat with them and see how they're doing. So it's really hard to say. I would imagine that it's best to maybe gauge it and see what, if your relationship with them is quite close, then that would mean that you would be behaving probably in a different way anyway.
I see we have a caller on the line. I want to see who that is. It says Sun. So, Sun just dropped the call. So I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a real quick commercial. Maybe Sun will come back. And if anybody else would like to call in, the number is 516-418-5651. We're talking with Megan Prowse about psychology and mental health and shyness and social anxiety and who knows what else might come up. We'll be right back.
Only once every few years does a show come along that makes you think, makes you care, makes you believe the impossible. A show featuring only the best in writing, acting, and directing. Until that show comes along, we suggest Paranoria, Texas. Thrill to the adventures of six superpowered nerds on a never-ending quest to take over the world and to complete their collection of She-Hulk comics. Paranoria, Texas, Monday nights at 8 p.m. Central on AstronetRadio.com.
We're back with Megan Prowse and Jean Albertson. You had mentioned right before the commercial, mindful compassion. And I would like to hear a little bit more about that. See, I think we all think we're compassionate, but I think there is definitely a difference between just being compassionate and being mindfully compassionate.
Yeah, definitely. I think the way that I kind of my interest in compassion particularly, and I guess if we're thinking about the mindful compassion as well, is towards ourselves. So I work with a lot of people, obviously with a range of difficulties, and also, you know, people that maybe don't come to somebody for mental health difficulties, but are just, you know, kind of in my world. And I guess something that I do notice a lot is, you know, this idea of being compassionate towards ourselves. And that's where I kind of link the term self-love. And I know it's something that is a bit of a buzzword, especially at the moment, but I still think that it's important to kind of speak in those terms, because I think it's something that's definitely lacking in all of us. So, you know, there's compassion towards other people, which is obviously hugely important, but I do think that we have a tendency to be very judgmental of ourselves and particularly very harsh and critical. And I think that can, whether you are dealing with a mental health difficulty or not, that can just make us feel terrible, which I'm sure we can all relate to that. You know, we're having a bad day, we're finding things difficult, and then we start to judge ourselves and are like, you know, why have you done that? You know, why can't you do this better? Or you should have done this. Or, you know, just that internal monologue that can just drive us, you know, to feeling even worse. And I guess it's something that I like to bring up quite a lot, because I do see that all of us kind of have that to different degrees, and it can actually add extra stress. And so this idea of maybe using something like mindfulness, where we just kind of try and become a bit more aware of our thoughts and of our internal dialogue, and then try and bring some compassion, which I guess in the most basic term is just us being kind to ourselves. And thinking, you know, actually, how can I take a bit of pressure off? And I wonder actually with this, Jean and Mary, whether what you think about this during this time of COVID. And I know people in my own life, and I've seen a lot on kind of social media, this sort of pressure to be doing a lot, even though we are pretty restricted at the moment, you know, this time needing to be super productive. And I just wonder at whether we are doing that thing again where we're not being particularly kind to ourselves.
I think it's very possible. We're talking about judging. I think we judge ourselves the hardest a lot of times, and so we expect the most of ourselves. You know, and is it I was reading something, and it may have been in Be Unique, about the idea that we are here we are now, just have time to relax and stuff, and by golly, we better do it. And we're going to stress out about, okay, we're all set now.
Yeah.
Here we go. You know, and,
I think that was probably Michelle Schaefer's article about how the quarantine is harder on introverts.
Because she made
the comment that, you know, she is an introvert, but she's a very sociable introvert in her own circle. And she said, you know, here we are, we're all locked down, we're all working from home. But then when she needs to go outside and reboot, because that's what a lot of introverts have to do, she finds that everywhere she used to go that was her safe place is now occupied by dozens of other people walking and going to the park and whatnot. And she has nowhere to go now. But she, you know, it's the same process that, okay, you know, we're on lockdown, so I have to show the world that I'm still essential, even though I'm working from home. So I have to work twice as hard as I ever did before.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this need to be super productive. And I think, you know, some of us are in a somewhat privileged position to be still working and, you know, having to kind of, I guess, account for tasks and things like that with our employers. And I think there's a pressure there, but there's also a huge pressure for those of us who aren't working at the moment, or where our circumstances have changed a lot. And I think it is about, you know, this almost being time where we need to be working towards something, or we need to be doing something. And yeah, I think it's changed for, you know, a lot of people's routines and world, I think. And that's a really good example, you know, somebody having their safe places, which is so important, and then actually seeing that everybody's, you know, out trying to I guess in some ways maybe be productive, maybe try and get some space or relax. You know, maybe home is really busy, and I can only imagine for people who maybe have small children and they're trying to kind of manage all of that at home as well. And yeah, I think it's a really tough time, and I think, you know, we all have different pressures at the moment. And but I think particularly, it is, and it's in both interesting examples to think about, you know, what's happening with our own internal world and how we're reviewing ourselves and potentially judging ourselves at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was probably one or two issues ago you wrote something about, along the same lines, about being kind to ourselves and a way to reverse some of the words that we use for when we feel bad. We have to replace some of the terms. You know, it's so easy if you make a mistake, whether you're being clumsy and you trip, or you know, you make a typo in your story that you've written. It's so easy for us to say, "Oh, you big dummy," or something of that nature. How could you be so silly or goofy or whatever? And you had written an article about how to substitute better, more positive terms to boost our self-love. And I think it's really important. I would love to encourage everybody to go to your website, City Psych Chick. That's CityPsychChick.com. Because another article that you wrote, it made me ask the question, you wrote several, but one of them was about, we need to remind ourselves that we are wise, wonderful, and priceless. Or not precious, I think it was. And I thought, wow, I haven't thought of myself as being precious. I think of my cat, who is adorable. He's precious. I think of my grandchildren as precious, and my kids when they were little. But I don't think of myself, well, I'm going to start, but I don't, you know, I don't usually associate that term with Mary. Mary's just a business person. She's a go-getter. But precious? So tell us why that's important, please, Megan.
Yeah, sure. It is an interesting word. And I think for me, when I hear that word, it's quite emotive. So I think about exactly as you said, precious is to me associated with so much love. And, you know, I think we I don't know how you both use that term, but for me, it's a rare term. So I can completely relate to what you're saying. You know, we would use that for somebody or something that we see as, you know, unique and valuable. And you said the word priceless. I think it is interchangeable with that.
You have a precious gemstone.
Exactly. And I think it is, for me, it's such a stark contrast to how we do talk about ourselves often. And, you know, some people are great at seeing their own strengths and talking about them, but I do think that that is a rarity. And I think, you know, if we could, you know, one of the exercises we do in what's called compassion-focused therapy is that we think about somebody, and this is something that you can also do in a meditation, but you think about somebody or something that you love so much, and I guess maybe you could use that word precious, and think about something in your life or somebody in your life that is so precious, and kind of imagining taking all of that feeling and turning it towards ourselves. And the one thing the reason I talk about this in multiple articles is because I actually think it's one of the hardest things to do. And I'm not sure what that's about, whether that is because we just don't think of ourselves that way, or we don't, we're not raised that way, or it's not productive. I'm not really sure. I think there's probably multiple reasons why.
I agree there. All those things you said, I think, probably contribute.
Well, I think, especially in the Western world, and also more especially in a religious basis, we have been raised to think that if we love ourselves, that it's egotistical. Or if you talk highly of yourself, it's bragging, it's boasting. Yep. And those things are taboo in certain cultures. But to me, I think it's, I don't have to tell you that I am perfect in every way, because you guys already know that. But, you know, I say that half jokingly, but I tell my husband sometimes I never make a mistake. I might be wrong, but I never make a mistake. but it's a matter of accepting yourself for who you are and understanding that we all have skills and we all have talents. There's nothing wrong with telling people about them in the right circumstance. I mean, I wouldn't just jump up at a party and say, oh, by the way, I'm the world's greatest editor, even though we know that's true. But, you know, there's a difference between bragging about who you are and accepting yourself for what you can do and what you bring to the world. I think this thing about preciousness, it's like a gift. And I think every human being is a gift to the world in one way or another. We have to just embrace that, I believe.
We do, but I think that is a really, really difficult thing to do. And I think, you know, as exactly as you said, there's a lot to do with culture here and the part of the world that we live in. And as you said, kind of, you know, those factors as we're brought up, and exactly as you said, that, you know, we don't want to be seen to be bragging. We need to be modest, because that's a good trait for us all to have as good humans, and, you know, to be acceptable in society. We know that those things do exist. But I think, you know, and there is always that fear that you would come across a certain way. But I think that in order to, you know, have this sense of well-being, we do, you know, need to come to not necessarily adoring ourselves, but at least, as you say, acknowledging that we do have some gifts and we do have some strengths that we can contribute. But I do know that is a really difficult and tough road. And I know even for my own personal journey, that has been a really difficult road to get to a place of self-love. And that's why I write about it so much, because, you know, I have kind of gone through all of those steps. And it's also something that I see in my work professionally, you know, and I work with people to get to a stage that they feel comfortable with in terms of, you know, caring about themselves and being compassionate towards themselves. But it's tough to get there, but it can be done in, you know, these kind of small ways and small steps. And I think language is a big part. Just to come back to your point, Mary, you said earlier about, you know, something I talk a lot about is how we're talking to ourselves. And, you know, I kind of shamelessly talk about these voices in our heads, because we do have this internal dialogue, and often it can be a really harsh place, a much harsher place than even our external reality, if we are speaking to ourselves in a uncompassionate or unkind way. So it is about, that's where I would start, is it might be difficult, but just catching yourself when you are extra critical, you know, that extra time you're saying, oh, come on, sort it out, or you've done a terrible job, you know, trying to switch some of those words if you can. That's the place where I would start, and not expecting yourself to be, you know, oh, I'm amazing, but okay, you know, maybe I did an okay job there. Maybe it wasn't too bad. You know, same thing.
Sometimes okay is definitely good enough. You know,
sure.
We don't always have to be perfect. We don't always have to be A plus. It's quite all right to be less than phenomenal at times. And you know, I think you had written something, I don't remember if it was for us or if it was on your website, about accepting ourselves. And even when we don't feel like we deserve to accept ourselves, or we don't even like who we are right now. And there have been times that I've forgotten that I should put a filter on my words, and I say what's on my mind, and it just comes out in a very, a less than loving way. And as soon as the words come out, I think, oh, you know, how could you say something like that? And you know better. But it's at those times that I think I need to be the most accepting and say, ooh, I made a mistake. Now let's see how we can fix it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is that it's not necessarily even being, you know, your own cheerleader, which would be great to get to that stage, but it's not even about that, is it? It's about, you know, not adding that extra layer of criticism when, you know, something's already difficult. And
sure.
You know,
let me ask you guys something.
Okay.
I think a lot of us think in terms of, oh, I shouldn't go out because everybody's going to be looking at me, or I shouldn't do this or that because they're going to think that I'm whatever. But don't you find that most people are so busy thinking about themselves and how they're going to come across that they don't really have time to be as critical of us as we are of ourselves?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think, you know, as much as we are so focused on ourselves, that's the case for everybody, because we are all humans and we think very similarly to each other. So, yeah, and it's something that is really important to remember when we're sort of worried about how others are going to view us and if they're having those kind of negative evaluations. It is actually, you know what, everyone's pretty wrapped up in themselves. And that's really good to remember. So we don't have to worry so much about what other people are thinking. But, you know, obviously it's a bit of a habit that we get into. But, yeah, it's a really important point.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes, I'm back. I lost connectivity for a moment. I'm so glad you guys didn't. I hope you carried on without me.
Well, is my microphone on right now?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay. I was talking, I think. I don't remember. I don't know how to run this equipment. I mean, I swear, I still remember the kind of telephone you put your finger in and turn around the dial, you know.
And Megan is just giggling because she's seen pictures of it, and she goes, boy, he must be really old.
Not at all. I think we're all used to well, at the moment especially, I know that my technology skills have been definitely tested with how much we're having to work online, and it's very I'm definitely feeling my own age, I think, at all of this technology, these issues.
Yes, and I feel I just feel for the people that weren't accustomed to this. You know, they didn't have the ability to work from home for whatever reason, and now all of a sudden they're thrown into it.
Right.
And especially, you know, parents who are now teaching their children through remote classes, or before the remote classes started, they were doing it all by themselves and didn't really know what they were doing.
Mm.
And they just winged it, you know.
Yeah, and I think coming back to this idea of pressure, I'm working with families and young people at the moment, and it's been obviously for everybody a really challenging time, but particularly exactly that, you know, all of even within families, people's roles needing to change, you know, parents are suddenly needing to be teachers as well as parents, and how difficult that is at home, and having to get accustomed to new skills. And you know, and I think when we were talking about being critical, I definitely could hear the kind of things that people have been saying, you know, in terms of their role as parents, and thinking, you know, am I doing a good enough job now, because I really need to be making my child do all the schoolwork. And you know, it's a really interesting time for challenging all of our sort of own beliefs about ourselves, and also those expectations that we put onto ourselves. And yeah, technology is just another area and another pressure, I guess, at the moment.
Well, you know, and I have to say is that's all the most exciting part to me, is because all of a sudden here we were just everybody's doing their thing, and now most people have to do something different than they ever did. And anytime you do something different, that automatically sends creativity juices in your mind. And so just think of all the people doing different things, all of a sudden have a creative thought. I'm looking forward to the next, you know, immediate future, and all these thoughts get out there and start mingling. Who knows what could happen, you know?
Right. I really love that. I really love that mentality, Dean. I think that's amazing, because actually, you know, I think it's so easy to get focused on what's happening and how we're all limited in a way, or restricted, you know, these really difficult words that we associate with this time. And obviously, most of that is completely true, and that is our reality. But there's also this other flip side, which I guess you're describing. It feels kind of like this sense of opportunity, and the sense of, you know, these new creative paths that we can take, and experimenting with new things. I think that's a really great way to, I guess, a flip side to see this, what's happening at the moment.
Oh, I think so. How many people do you know that go to work and they love what they do? They love working with people. They hate their job. They hate the stress, you know, whatever it might be, but they keep doing it. And now just how many of those people had to do something different, and they're going to find something. They aren't going to have to go back to it. Something's going to be better for them. So that's what I know. They're out there, and they're there.
That's how Be Unique got started, Gene.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Jennifer and I were both unhappy in our jobs. We'd worked together before on another magazine, newspaper, whatever. And we just started, we had lunch one day and we're brainstorming and thinking about what can we do to make our life better? How can we be happy in what we do? Mm-hmm. Thank goodness we didn't say, how can we be happy and make a lot of money? Because Be Unique wouldn't have been part of it. But we're working on that. We're working on that. But, you know, it's very interesting how you're absolutely right. People have had time to now reevaluate where they are in life, what they're doing with life, and where do they want the rest of their life to, what direction they want to take it.
And what about this? What about this? How about everybody's divisive mentality, or I should say divisive viewpoint, has to change, because all those rigid divisions have blurred. They're different now than they were in many respects. So I'm saying, I think we're on the upswing too. I think we're over the hump just as we speak. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's a new time, isn't it? And I think it's a new time to, as you say, evaluate and look at what's working, what's not working, and
yeah.
and what's important to us, and what do we want more of, and what do we want less of, and
yeah.
how to, you know, maybe that is where the creative part comes into. How do we create that, or how do we make space for that in our lives? And
yeah,
things have to change. And, you know, with that, as you say, and Mary, might come these amazing opportunities and these new projects and new things to focus on.
Yeah. Ones we haven't thought of before.
Exactly. Now, Megan, you work with people who have a lot of challenges, I would say. And I could be wrong, but would you tell me if you've noticed that people's sleep habits have changed with being home all the time? Has that come up as an issue?
I think you just broke up a bit. Did you say sleep habits that at the moment with being
yes.
home all the time? Is that?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I would. To be honest, I would say most habits are changing with being home all the time, as we're kind of describing. I think it's been, I guess, the word that I would say is an upheaval for lots of people. You know,
oh, yeah.
whether it's been good or bad or in between, it's been a huge shift and a huge change. And obviously, as a health service, we've had to shift and change and adapt, and you know, to keep up with being able to support people at this time and support staff who are, you know, frontline
yeah.
emergency department and ward staff and things like that. So I think for everybody, habits have changed, and it's yeah. It's a really good point. Sleep is a big one, you know, because sleep is affected by so many things. And I think, you know, activity level or stress level, you know, hormones level, that can all be affected. It can all affect sleep. And if we have also less sleep, then the rest of our day, as we know, is really impacted. So I would say in general, definitely. And I think for lots of people, this period of adjustment has raised a lot of anxiety, understandably. And, you know, that is a reality. And it's something that I think we all have to deal with and support each other with. But I think, you know, it depends on your lifestyle, doesn't it? As you're saying, Mary, not much for you necessarily feels that different. But I guess, you know, even if that's the case, we have a sense of maybe this global anxiety or this global
yes.
feeling of change, and change, as we know, whether it's good or bad, in and of itself as a process creates anxiety. So I
mm-hmm.
guess and that will affect things like sleep and appetite and our physical and mental health. So I would say it's a resounding
yes. Talk about the appetite changes.
Well, what's been happening your end, Mary?
I have really tried very hard to maintain the sense of normalcy or naturalness, as we call it, that I had prior. You know, I try to go to bed at the same time. I try to get up at the same time. And I think that's so important. I had not realized how much I personally rely on my morning and my evening ritual.
Mm.
You know, there are certain things I do every single morning that if I skip it, once my whole day is kind of kicked out of kilter. And same way with going to bed every night. If I don't do my little routine in the order that I typically do it, which usually includes a book in bed while I'm relaxing, but there are other things that I do every night before I go to sleep. And if I skip one, I find that my sleep is not quite as pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the next day, my mental well-being is a little bit off.
Yeah, I think the routine and rituals side is so important. And it's really important for sleep, because sleep is actually, I mean, we think of it as being, you know, a bodily mechanism, as it were, but it is actually a habit. And when we help people who have sleep difficulties, you know, the place that we start is we think about it being a habit, which means that there are certain behaviors and rituals that are naturally involved in that. And it's in some ways makes it a bit difficult, because as you say, if something is out of kilter or you have a change to your routine, then your sleep's affected. But in other ways, it's a really amazing thing to work on, because it, as with any habit, we know that it, you know, it takes a bit of time to form it or unform it, as it were, depending on the habit. But actually, with that, it's a pretty predictable trajectory. So if you put these things in place, then the, you know, over time, we know that that is going to help with sleep. So, and I think, yeah, it's a really good point, thinking actually, just, you know, everything else changing around us, our routines are really important. And I guess also to be realistic about that, and again, to be kind to yourself with that. You know, there are things that we can't control right now, like the fact that maybe you're working from home, or maybe you're off work at the moment, which means that, you know, different, you're going to have a different level of kind of physical activity, or a different level of stress, which will affect your sleep. But, you know, with that, it's also keeping to things that you can do at home. You know, as you said, your kind of routines and where you can keep those consistent, that's going to be really important for keeping things like sleep going the way that it has been going. You know, if you need to have that wind down routine at night and you can't do that for whatever reason, it's about thinking, okay, how can I get that same effect? Maybe I need to do things slightly differently and adapt to it, but still have that same feeling of that kind of wind down and that relaxation.
Megan, you've said a phrase probably 4 or 5 times in the last 45 minutes.
Oh gosh, that is fabulous.
No, it's wonderful, but because it's so important. Be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
And I suspect there are people listening, or who will listen to the archive show, that are going to be thinking, that's all well and good to say, but how do I do that?
Yeah.
Can you help with that?
I would love to help with that. I think, you know, it is, as I sort of said about self-love, I think the first thing to say is it can be really difficult. It can be really difficult to be kind to ourselves. Often we don't even know where to start. So I think that your question is a great one, and it's something that we all need to ask ourselves is, you know, am I doing that? And if not, how can I do that? And I would say, if you're somebody that finds that really difficult and doesn't know how or where to start, I would say start really, really, really small. And I know that sounds simple, but it is the best way to go. And that I mean with that kind of small, and maybe I don't know how you both manage this, but maybe we can sort of exchange ideas here. But I guess I would think about, you know, if I were looking at a friend right now who is maybe stressed or tired, or, you know, how would I speak to them? Would I shout at them? Would I berate them? Hopefully not. And how can I look at that person, as we said before, with that sort of love and that appreciation, and think about what I would do potentially for them, or what I would want them to do to make themselves feel better? And this can be really small. It can be, you know, making sure that you've got a tidy sitting room so that you don't have to look at a load of mess and feel really stressed. It can be, you know, making sure that you've had at least one thing that is, you know, nice to eat in the day, or something that's healthy, or even that you've eaten regularly. It could be, you know, making sure that you have time to yourself, even if that's 5 minutes. And I would say these things can be really small, and obviously it's going to depend on our lifestyle. As I said, you could be busy household or busy job, or even not feeling like you want to take care of yourself at the moment, that's also okay. And it's just about taking those really small steps. So whatever that means for you. And I think with self-care and self-love, it's so individual. I know that we all think about things like, you know, having a bath, or painting our nails, or going shopping, or, you know, whatever the habits are, or seeing our friends. But for lots of people, those things aren't that fun.
I think Gene would worry about painting his nails so much.
Exactly. And I know for me, it's the shopping thing is kind of a nightmare. It's not something that I enjoy doing at all. So, you know,
we talked about that before the show.
Yeah.
You know, before the lockdown, I had hurt my back, and so I had gotten accustomed to shopping for my groceries online and having them delivered. And now that it's become a daily, you know, well, not daily, but a weekly habit to just sit down at my computer or take my phone to my bed and shop for groceries at night, the next morning they show up. I like it.
Mm.
To me, that's the epitome of luxury.
I
don't enjoy going shopping. I never have. You know, a lot of women love to go, oh, I'm going to go get some new shoes. I probably have shoes that are older than Megan right now that still fit. I like them, and they're not worn out, so I'm still wearing them.
Right, exactly. So, and I completely relate to that. I do not enjoy shopping at all. So yeah, and I think it's hard because I think, you know, there's lots of advice out there and about self-care and what that means. And I would say actually self-care is that just that feeling of, you know, that little 5-minute window where you might feel a little bit less pressure, or you might feel a small bit of relaxation, or whatever that activity is, you know, that makes you feel a little bit better in your day, that
sure.
is being kind to yourself. And so
give yourself permission to do it, to stop for a second, you know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a big one for me. That was hard. Just it's okay to just stop mm-hmm. and take 2 breaths for me.
And it's okay to not always be your best.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's okay to make a mistake. That doesn't mean that you're a flawed human. Well, we all are, but it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It just means you are human.
Yeah, exactly. And Gina, I love that word of permission, giving yourself permission. Mm-hmm. It's such an important point. But actually, as you say, for lots of people and myself included, it's a tough one to give yourself that permission and that allowance to, okay, I'm important enough to take 5 minutes. And if mm-hmm. you are somebody that struggles with that, I would say try your best not to think in that way, you know, because it can be really hard to think, you know, I deserve this self-love and the self-care, and it can take a while to get there. So I would say try and just literally put it into your routine. You know, if you've got a to-do list, I would say put the 5 minutes somewhere in there, you know,
five minutes,
you know, almost like a prescription, as it were, for yourself, or a task on your to-do list, so that you make sure that you do that, and hopefully that gets you over that hurdle of the permission, because it can be really tough.
Sure.
If we go to a doctor and we get a prescription, and, you know, usually they say take 3 times a day. Sometimes they give you a specific time. So it makes perfect sense. I like that. Give yourself permission to give yourself a prescription to just take time out.
Yeah.
I like that. Well,
yep. And I think it really goes back to what we were talking about with the self-love. I know I was a long time coming to it, and it really had a lot to do with my expectations for me were so high that I can guarantee you nobody could reach them. And just when I got close, they went up. And I didn't really understand all that until after the fact. And I went back to what my grandpa told me when I was a little kid. I used to help him cut lumber and hammer nails. He was a carpenter. And he'd cuss and stuff, and he's the one that kind of taught me how to do it right. But he told me one time, he said, anybody can do it right the first time if you know how. But he said it takes a real pro to fix it if you mess up.
Ooh.
And I kind of kept that with me in my heart, and it came out when I needed it the most. And by golly, it worked, because, you know, I've made mistakes, and it's okay. You know, I can still go ahead and take a break and see what we're going to breathe a little bit and see where we're going to go from here. And I think, like you said, just baby steps, just one little tiny something to look forward to. Mm-hmm. And it feels so good, and it becomes a habit. It just kind of grows, you know, automatically almost. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But anybody can do it right the first time if you know how. But it takes a real, real pro to fix it when you mess up.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's a great slogan, isn't it? And a brilliant summary, actually, is, you know, it's not about doing it right the first time. And I think with something like kindness to yourself and self-love, you can't really do it right the first time. That would be, it would be really, really tough. So actually, yeah, it's how can you keep doing it? And even when it feels uncomfortable, how can you keep putting that 5 minutes into your day to take care of yourself?
Sure. Well, and like you said, we're
like
talking
everything
earlier,
else,
you know,
we have to practice.
Practice, exactly. Mm-hmm. And if you do say something because it comes out and it is unkind and it's through your filter, then how many people do you know just automatically buck up and double down on it and scowl their brow instead of saying, wow, I am so sorry. That is not what I meant to say, you know. Mm-hmm. And that I think it exacerbates and just grows like a snowball. And again, we don't give ourselves permission to just take a break and breathe and say, okay, now what was this all about? So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm glad you
got
that.
I'm going to tell you, our time is up. So we definitely need to have Dr. Megan Prowse come back on the show later on. Because I could talk with you all day. I've learned so much. This has just been phenomenal.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just gonna chime in and say, and I think, you know, this topic is such a big one, and I think it's something we should probably all continue to talk about and probably need to talk about. I think it's been great to touch on it. So thank you.
You are so welcome. I want to remind everybody that you can find Megan on citypsychchick.com. That's CitypsychK.com. You can follow her on Instagram at the same site at City Psych Chick. And you can also read what she writes about self-care and well-being and mental health in beunique.org. I just really enjoyed this. I can't believe the hour has flown by. I really can't. Do you have any last words for our listeners, Megan?
Oh, pressure. No.
Okay, Jean, you go first. I know you've got something ready.
I like to have everybody just kind of remember that whatever you're doing, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right.
Oh, I love that.
I like
Jean, I think you've got some amazing slogans. I feel like you should just, you know, wrap up all of our discussion, but that's a great one. I would agree, and I think it is, again, I'm going to say it one more time, it's about being kind to yourself, and also, you know, knowing that that is going to be tough, but it's definitely worth it. If you can fit those 5 minutes in, then I would encourage you to do that.
Awesome. Before I give you my parting words, I'd like to tell everybody that our next guest next Thursday is Renee King. She is the owner of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. It's going to be quite a show. We'll be talking about rescuing cows. She was the wife of a rancher, and now she runs a sanctuary, and she and her husband are both vegan. So there's quite a difference, but it also has to do with being kind to everybody and every kind of body, not just yourself. So, and I think she was practicing self-kindness when she was thinking in terms of protecting these animals. Megan, once again, thank you so much for joining us. I have thoroughly enjoyed this. My parting words are for you to, whatever your belief is, whoever you worship, whether you worship anything or anybody at all, I call him Gus, because to me, God is the universe and spirit. But go with Gus and walk with angels, because angels are all around you. Whether you know them, see them, hear them, feel them or not, they are there. And they will help you be kind to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I'll say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye, all.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners, and that our website and magazines receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's beunique www.thecdc.org.
Thanks, Megan.
Oh, thank you so much. That was great.
Bye-bye.
Bye.